So what you're suggesting is people's diets and lifestyle have contributed to crooked teeth, overbites, underbites, and just generally misshapen faces.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily an ugly person. You just haven't been, what, holding your tongue properly? If you're an adult and you want to become more attractive or fix your jaw or get a stronger jaw, what exactly do you do?
Okay, so this is the big multi-million dollar question. A face that's not the right shape doesn't work properly.
This episode features Dr. Mike Mew, who's behind the viral Mewing for an Attractive Jaw craze. His dad, John Mew, came up with Mewing, a way to prevent and potentially fix crooked teeth and improve your health and the way you breathe and look. It's pretty revolutionary, very aligned with ancestral living, if you're into that. It makes more sense to me. If you watch the episode and decide you'd like to support Mike, there's a petition link below at preventcrookedteeth.com you can sign. Enjoy and let me know what you think of this. Is there anything you specifically want to talk about? I saw that you're being investigated.
Well, you know, I was interested with the parallels with the fact your father's being investigated. And, you know, it's a system against the new idea. You know, I'm breaking the mold and they want to shut me up, basically, and they've got, it's just so unfair. You know, they have all of the, everything in their favor. And, you know, it's just be difficult being the little guy trying to put something forward. But, you know, my central theme, you know, has been to trying to debate why are teeth crooked. You know, I've been trying to engage my profession in a debate. I'm saying, look, don't listen to anything, you know, listen to a word I've got to say, but believe that I want the scientific process. Mm-hmm. I want a debate on why teeth are crooked. And then we work upwards. You know, you start with etiology. And if you're treating all these kids and you openly admit you've got no idea what causes the problem.
Yeah. No.
And there is so much more to this. Mewing, clearly, I wasn't expecting mewing. It's sort of, I guess I was very lucky. You know, you've got to recognize when you're being lucky and I guess make the most of it because I have been lucky. And this is helping me get that message out there. But really, what it is, something's going wrong with the way people's faces are growing. And people don't want to admit this. People want to believe that the way their face grew was genetic, and that's it. And yet it's so clearly not genetic, and all the hard evidence says it's not genetic. But you've got a profession, in fact, quite a few professions when you analyze it, they're predicated, word I learned from your father, on this problem, you know, crooked teeth or sleep apnea or the way your face grows and lots of ENT problems and jaw joint problems. The inference is that these are caused by it's genetics. At least that's the way we're treating it, as if it were caused by the genetics. And yet all the hard evidence says that it's not caused by genetics. And medicine doesn't like to change. You know, it has a great inertia against change. I mean, you know this. And there's inevitable pushback. And of course, what really annoys me, I mean, the biggest thing I really want to push is prevention.
Yeah.
Because I think that I don't know if you could completely prevent it in the modern world, but I'm sure you could make a lot of effort to reduce the severity of these problems with simple public health messages like eat with your mouth shut. Stand up straight and shut your mouth. That's not a new idea. And it's just getting that message out there and really making parents of children aware of the amount they can do to ensure that their child grows closer to their full genetic potential. Because a face that is the right shape, grew well, is a healthier face. But unfortunately, a healthier face is also an attractive face. You know, I think that we're hardwired to be attracted to healthy people. In many ways, that maybe is what attraction is. and attractiveness is health in many other ways. But of course, it's also a motive. You know, it suddenly becomes emotional. I remember before I became famous or before I had a following, parents would bring their child to see me. And, you know, the mother would laugh at how crooked their child's teeth were. And then I would start explaining the philosophy and the concept behind what we were thinking. And the penny would then drop in the mother that I was suggesting that their child's face hadn't grown me.
Yeah.
And they'd have a sense of humor failure. And I had one mother leave. You know, I couldn't have been politer. I couldn't have been nicer. And I'm saying, well, you know, how do you circle that square? You know, and I walk down the street and I'm seeing a train wreck, a disaster, car accident. And it's everyone I meet. Everyone's faces have
grown. Yeah.
You know, and we know how they should grow because we've got the skulls. Go look. They're in the museums. And, you know, it's the same. You see that guy walking off to Africa and Serengeti, you know, bold as brass, you know, fantastic, big, broad smile with all 30 teeth and usually something like a centimeter behind the wisdom teeth.
Wow.
That's a vast amount of tongue space, you know, for his tongue. And interestingly, they look just like our ancestors. And we don't look like our ancestors. And there's been this huge change and no one's pointing it out. No one's saying, hello. Well, people are. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the book Jaws. Yes, I have. It's popping up my mic at the moment. I don't even believe with you know this book here. This is basically my father's concept. Yeah, taken by Sandra Kahn and Paul Ehrlich. So Paul Ehrlich at Stanford, who came out with population bomb.
Yeah,
and you know they produced the book, and that is you know Paul came to our house. I mean I've known Sandra for years, and she wanted to put the story together and present the story. And you know it's there. It's well documented. It's well researched. It's you know I would wish I had time to write a book like that myself. It, you know, it's there. It's scientifically valid, but it's too much. It's too much of a destructive idea. It damages too many people's status quo and professions and qualifications and income, you know, the resistance is large.
Hey guys, if you enjoy a few glasses of wine once a week or a drink at any point in your life in any amount, you need to try the supplement I launched, After Party. It helps you break down acetaldehyde, which is the toxin that alcohol, ethanol, converts into in your body when you drink that poisons you and leads to alcohol damage. The supplement is made of dihydromyrisetin, which is a terrible name for a supplement, which is why we called it After Party, which also works weekly on GABA, so it can help with anxiety following drinking as well, if that's something that bugs you. Obviously, don't abuse alcohol, but if you're into biohacking and you don't have a hangover pill, you're doing it wrong. You could say you're doing biohacking wrong if you drink anything, but hey, life is life. Sometimes people want to have a few drinks. Smartdrugs.life, code MP for 15% off, and you can try it for 30 days completely risk-free because we'll give you your money back if you don't want it. Obviously, there's no point in getting wasted, so don't do that. But there's also no point in drinking any amount without helping your body break down acetaldehyde. So try it out, smartdrugs.life, code MP for 15% off. I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. Yeah. Well, what it's suggesting is that you can change the shape of your skull, right? Basically?
Well, yes. This is the thing. You know, you start saying, well, if this is an environmental change, then you can change your environment and thus you can change your facial form. And this sounds radical, but look at anyone who has a stroke.
Yeah.
And you see one on the side. So you know I'm right. But it is one of those things that just jars with people. People, you know, you know, that image that looks back to you from any mirror in the world. You know, what's on what bit of your passport or a driving license do people look at when they want to identify you? It's your photograph. It's your face. In many ways, you could say that is your identity. For me to come along and say that thing that you think your identity is, it's plastic. You can change your face. You know, it's like you've changed your personality. You're not the same person. Yep. It's just all these layers of emotive. And I'm sure I'm going to be burnt alive by people who are saying, oh, you should be happy the way you are. You know, you should. And what am I saying? I'm coming along saying that, well, actually, you can change the very essence of what you think is you is malleable, it's mobile. And if your face hasn't grown very well, not only is it probably your, or even worse, your parents' fault, but it's probably causing you serious health problems.
Oh, I can see why there's a little bit of pushback from people. Okay. Well, let's get started with then. So what you're suggesting is people's diets and lifestyle have contributed to malocclusion, crooked teeth, overbites, underbites, and just generally misshapen faces. And so you're not necessarily an ugly person. You just haven't been, what, holding your tongue properly? What's gone wrong?
Okay, so when, you know, the important question always in medicine is what caused this problem? Mm-hmm. Because medicine's supposed to be about treating the causes of problems. Now, well, I couldn't tell you if our ancestors had sleep apnea. Couldn't tell you if they had type 2 diabetes. We don't know. They're dead and there's no soft tissue left. We don't have contemporaneous records taken at the time. What we do have, though, is all these skulls. So I can tell you precisely where the teeth were or still are. And I can also tell you precisely that the dimensions of the shapes of skulls. And what you see when you go back in skull records is the further back you go, the more conformity there was, mm-hmm. and the better architecture of the face there was. I mean, in all racial groups, all the way around the world, this is not a racial thing. You know, where this really is just skin deep. And then you go to start looking at what's changed. What are the major factors that have changed that period from when we were hunter-gatherers to the modern environment? And the two, I mean, there's quite a lot of factors, but the two really big factors seem to be that we've gone from this really tough, hard, rough diet, mm-hmm. where you needed to eat a lot. You needed to eat a lot to gain the calories you needed for the day. And we've gone across to this diet that is just uber soft. And it's very calorie rich. You could have, so I could make you a drink. You know, I looked this up, you know, a Starbucks white cafe mocha is, I think, 420 calories. Well, that's before you start put some marshmallows and cream and some sweetener, you know, syrups in there. I mean, you could get that up easily to a quarter, if not a third, of your calorific, not nutritional, but just the calories you need for the day. And to gain those calories, you've done no effort, no masticatory effort. You've not used these puppies here. You've not used them at all to get those calories on board. So either that day you were going to eat more stuff to use your muscles and then put on weight because you're taking too many calories on board, or you're going to eat less. You know, you don't eat as much that day to compensate for those calories, the easy calories you've done. And that's what's happening. You know, we're giving, you know, you see the amount of sugar that's creeping into foods. Well, the amount of effort is going down. I remember a lecturer telling me that our ancestors were eating for up to a third of the day.
Wow.
Now, that's a huge amount of effort. That's a vast change. You know, we think of our bodies as doing what 30% of the exercise that our ancestors did. I think our jaws, my guesstimation, is about 5% of what our jaws are doing. You can see from the wear of our teeth. And I'm not saying we, you know, we need to go back to wearing our teeth down as our ancestors did, but medicine's about treating the cause of the problem. You've got to understand that cause. And of course, you know, I've got a strong jaw.
Yes, you do.
That my jaw would fit all my teeth quite happily. And that strong jaw is related to this strong jaw muscle. You know, that the use it or lose it. It's, it's called Wolf's Law in greater or lesser extent.
That's just the masseter muscle?
This here is the masseter and the temporalis is coming. You don't see the temporalis, but, you know, you can ripple it if you try. But the masseter's here. And how, you know, that strong jaw is related to that strong muscle, and you get strong muscles from using them. So it's not complex. It's relatively simple.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next factor seems to have changed is we're getting nasal obstructions. And nasal obstructions seem to have become really commonplace.
Now, yeah.
Not really my area, but we know they're going up dramatically. People are getting allergies. They're getting blocked noses. There's a rapid increase. And if you can't breathe out of your nose, you have two choices. You don't breathe, which isn't good, or you're going to open your mouth to breathe. And when you open your mouth to breathe, you lose that tongue to palate contact. And that's, I think, it's a really, really vital reflex that we have. And you lose your lip seal. You know, and that's a reflex. That's one of the orifices in your gut. Don't lose any of those orifices. They're all important. And if you as vital as those reflexes are, breathing's clearly more important. You know, breathing's possibly the most important thing you're going to do. You know, that I think that's number one on my desires today, to breathe. Everything else comes below that. So to breathe properly, you throw away tongue to palate contact, you throw away lip seal. Now, a lot of people regain lip seal at around puberty because you just realize this looks a little stupid. You bring your lips together, but you rarely are you gonna get your tongue back up on the roof of the mouth. And usually at that point, your palate's narrowed to the point where you're going to struggle to get your tongue on the roof of the mouth anyway. So, you know, it becomes a vicious cycle. A lot of people's faces are now so long, they're going to struggle to get their lips together comfortably. And of course, we're creatures of comfort. We're only going to do, we'll only maintain as your posture what's comfortable. So we've got these two changes. We've gone from really tough, strong muscles from all this chewing. We've gone from tongue on the palate, lips together. There. And we've now got weak muscles, mouth open. Now, does that look familiar?
Oh, very.
That's like 80% of school children are walking around like this. You know, I take my kids to school and it's just like, I just close my eyes, pretend I didn't see it. Well, what can you say to people? You know, I'm not going to be in that position and say to parents, oh, by the way, you should be, you know. They're going to give me a flea in the ear and tell me where to go, as they rightly should. And of course, if you hang your mouth open and you're weak muscles, your face is going to lengthen. And again, we go back to that. You've got a stroke. You can see that. And remember, most people have a stroke. It's only the facial muscles. It's the surface muscles. And yet that can still create a relatively pronounced effect. And I remember working in hospitals when I saw a guy who had a road traffic accident and he'd severed his trigeminal nerve, you know, the power nerve that supplies these muscles, the big muscles. It was amazing. You know, it was incredible seeing how quickly one side of his face dropped down.
Wow.
And, you know, it reminds you just how plastic faces are. But if your face lengthens, because you're hang your mouth open with weak muscles. It's a little bit like one of those children's toys heads, and they're just being stretched. So it gets narrower and it gets shallower. and you reduce the cross-sectional area.
So horrifying.
I know we were talking about kids, you know, it just...
You know what happened
my
to...
blood when I see this. But reduce cross-section, that's crooked teeth, a.k.a. malocclusion, crowding.
Yeah. When Scarlett... So I have a five-year-old.
Yeah.
And she used a soother when she was little. And I didn't know. I didn't know.
Yeah, but don't beat yourself up about this. Because, you know,
I'm still beating myself up.
Yeah, you know, and there's lots you can do now. So my grandfather, so I'm a third generation orthodontist. My grandfather was taught by Harold Chapman in the UK. And Harold Chapman was the guy who made orthodontics. He pushed orthodontics into being a science, you know, evidence-based. Well, in that direction, we didn't get evidence-based idea till a little bit later. But he pushed it to being scientific. And he still, you know, there's a Harold Chapman Prize that the British Orthodontic Society runs. And so what he told my grandfather was at 4 or 5 years old, if you didn't have enough space between all the upper incisors, so, you know, you've got the upper incisors here, here's a cast, so you'd have space. And I think it was actually between the canine as well. So you'd have the gap there, the gap there, the gap there, the gap there, and the gap there. So that's 5 spaces, I believe. And if at 4 or 5 years old, you didn't have the space for a half crown. Now that is about 2 millimeters thick.
Wow.
Then you were going to have problems in the future. And he recommended doing a burst of expansion to kick the kids out of this hole they were in. And I did it for both my kids. And if you implement that with some really good functional exercises, then it can really be really beneficial to kids.
What does that look like? What do you do for kids who have crowded teeth?
You widen them. So basically, you just look at the top of this appliance. The top of this appliance, you can see you've got a screw in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And you can put that in the roof of a child's mouth and widen them.
Wow. But
from the way Harold Chapman was talking, it's relatively clear, I think, that this was relatively rare. So most children would have that much space, which is literally 10 millimeters. And yet, I see no kids with that much space anymore. No one, you know, I never see it. It would be, you treat every child that walks in.
Hmm.
And that reflects the amount of change that we've had just in 100 years. You know, Harold Chapman was teaching my father maybe in the throughout the 20s. So my grandfather started just before the war, First World War, clearly signed up, joined the First World War, got shot up, came back, finished his education after the war. So it was that era, First World War era. And, you know, I think it's so easy just to forget how things were and become accommodated to how things are now.
So speaking of how to look good, eat meat, feed your kids meat, introduce your babies to meat as a first food so they don't just survive on soft foods and have underdeveloped jaws and end up as ugly individuals. I eat low histamine meat from betterfed.com, and with code MP, you can get 20% off your first order. If you do have histamine intolerance, so you get sweaty after eating aged meat or your stomach doesn't feel right, they have unaged beef available to you now. This is extremely hard to come by. Most beef is aged, so check it out because their stock is limited. If you don't have histamine intolerance, which is, it's a better way to be, they also have amazing, just regular aged meat. A study by North Dakota State University found their beef, Anya beef, to be as tender as American Wagyu, but at a fraction of the price. Betterfed beef is made up of 17 Midwest farm families who raise and care for the cattle and are also owners in the business. This is what I eat and love, and I can pretty much choose whatever meat to eat, and I like these guys. So visit betterfedbeef.com, use the promo code MP at checkout for 20% off your first order. So you should make that order a big order, because 20% off is a great deal. Betterfedbeef.com, real beef from real families, making jaws look better since 2 million years ago. So how do you solve, because I have two things that I definitely want to cover, which would be, one, if you're an adult, and you want to become more attractive or fix your jaw or get a stronger jaw, what exactly do you do?
Okay, so this is the big multi-million dollar question. My core business has always been treating kids and treating kids really young. I much prefer, you know, our motto is eight's getting too late for treatment. So I much prefer younger kids. At 4 years old, I often do just this little burst of expansion. And kids, when they're developing, they are so plastic. It's unbelievable, really, to watch kids. Over about 25, it is really difficult to change your craniofacial structure. I gave this lecture in the 21 convention. It's the sort of lecture, you know, where I've researched that I never should have given, because it was all followed by one of these incels and people that have become, apparently, I'm a big name amongst the incels now. I mean, I don't know what quietly that brings to me, but I gave this lecture anyway, and at the end of the lecture, I was swamped by people, you know, 19, 20-year-old, mainly boys, saying, okay, how can I make my face better?
Yeah.
And of course, that wasn't actually what was going through my head, just with exercises. And I was kind of saying to them, well, you know, you'd be crazy to try. It's a really difficult thing to do. I mean, changing yourself, changing your habits is, in a way, changing your nature. And, you know, it's hard to change your nature. It is a hard thing to do. But on the other hand, I guess you'd be crazy not to try. Because what else are you doing with your mouth? What I'm saying is stand up straight and shut your mouth. It's not rocket science. It's not new. This is what I'm saying, really, is a reiteration, a reworking of ancient ideas. You know, this has gone from Confucius to the Victorians, all the way through society. You know, the same mantra has been running, and an important mantra at that. However, I then seem to start, I crystallized this thing in people's minds, and people then work really hard. And I've been really, really stunned at some of the images I see from people.
Yeah.
Of the changes they gain. And it is just, they're doing this by brute force. They are getting results because they really want results. And for some of these kids, I really feel for them. And I can understand why, you know, it wasn't their fault. Many of them were pushed into orthodontics that they really didn't want to do. In the cases that I've seen, sometimes the orthodontist can tip the balance and actually lengthen faces.
Oh.
And they're then forced to wear retainers by their parents. We're telling them, I paid for this orthodontics, you've got to wear the retainers. And they're, you know, I think they intrinsically know that something's wrong. They see what I'm saying. And these kids, they feel like they're at the bottom of a pile. They do. You know, we don't like to talk about it. The fact that that ugly kid's the unpopular one. Because we've had this mentality that that's his genetic hand and there's nothing you can do about it. And when I start turning around saying, well, actually, that's not true. There's a lot you can do about it. Well, these kids, they're jumping on it. And they really, you know, you think you're the unpopular one. You're the ugly one. You're the, you know, you. I guess there may be, mate, this is a broad spectrum of why that may be. But you can imagine these kids at that age are going to fix themselves on trying to make themselves better. They have a huge level of motivation because everything in their life is reminding them about this. And they really focus and they really get, then they gain changes. And I'm really stunned with that. And of course, they're thinking, oh, well, I'm looking better. And I'm thinking, you're healthier.
Mm-hmm.
This is really going to help you in your life. Now, my mission is to try and move the needle further north, you know, get into slowly get, understand how I can help older and yet older patients, in part with appliances and in part with exercises, and, you know, see if I can change the face of the world or the faces of the world. Because a lot of people are getting really bad health issues from this.
Yeah.
And crooked teeth is just, it's one symptom. You know, when you know, you look, I can put a picture of an ancestral upper jaw. So, you know, here's a patient I've treated. And you can see that's a big, wide upper jaw.
Yeah.
And my, for me, my mark of success is when the wisdom teeth come in, and when the wisdom teeth come in at around 18 years old, because that's when they should come in and there should be space for them. And then, you know, if he gets wisdom teeth coming, he's got, you know, not, you know, he's got a really big upper jaw. Now that's a lot of space for your tongue. Are getting kids coming or older patients coming in and they've had a premolar extracted mm-hmm. and they're also missing their wisdom teeth. So that's four premolars, four wisdom teeth, and they're slightly crowded. Where's the space for their tongue? There's no space in it. You can see that the face isn't well developed. There's no space for the tongue. And then where's the tongue? Well, they seem to have a high chance of having sleep apnea. Because where else is the tongue going to go? You know, this is the house for the tongue. If you lack space here, your tongue's falling in the back of your airway. And that would appear to be what sleep apnea is. And I see people, you know, I've been to sleep apnea meetings and they're talking about, you know, all of these different potential causes and the categorizing. That's what, you know, people have got to research or die. You've got to come up with papers saying something and they're categorizing. And I'm saying, well, haven't someone noticed? Here's an ancestral jaw, here's an ancestral jaw, and here's a modern jaw. They're vastly different. And until you've excluded this massive, I mean, massive change in form, well, surely all of your other categorizations are going to come second to this huge change in facial form. And yet, I've been trying just to get any form of scientific engagement, you know, so in 2009, I wrote an article, you want to look it up, The Black Swan by Mike Mew, where I challenged the British orthodontics. I said, look, you know, we had a debate, I think it was in 1937, held by the General Dental Council, you know, the main regulator, the government body in charge of dentistry, the board, if you wish. And they held that debate on the etiology of malocclusion. Why are teeth crooked? Now, you know, that was 1937. Maybe we should have another debate. And that's what I was saying to my regulator. You know, we should have a debate on this because this is important stuff. You know, we're treating, you know, I think at least 50%. I mean, if the people who can afford it, I think it's way higher than that. You know, I had a girl who came in and she said every other person in her class had braces on. She was the only one without braces on. Well, she had one of my braces in. So that means that's 100% in that class. 100% of the people all are having some, you know, quite invasive. Just because everyone's having treatment done, it doesn't mean this isn't really quite an invasive procedure to have done in a incredibly sensitive part of your body. And this is being done while my specialty, the orthodontic specialty, openly admits it has basically no idea why teeth are crooked. So I said, okay, well, you know, there's situations where we're pressed ahead in medicine where we don't understand the answers, but we should be ready at a drop of a hat to engage in that conversation and drive conversation forward. Well, after my article in the British Dental Journal, I then had a letter writing campaign. I wrote to all the government bodies, you know, the Minister of Health, the All Party Dental Committee, the Quango above the General Dental Council, the General Dental Council, I think four heads, the Royal Society, I wrote to everyone because, you know, I wanted to make a meaningful challenge. And I think I exhausted all possible avenues to engage in the scientific process. I'm saying all I want is a scientific process. Don't believe I'm right. You know, don't believe a word I'm saying. But, you know, look what we've achieved. You know, here we go. You know, fantastic things we've achieved. My ability to talk to you right now.
Yeah.
And this has all been done by adherence to the scientific process. You know, finding out what works. And, you know, I thought medicine, you know, medicine we were supposed to be about trying to find answers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet no one, bar no one, has engaged with me. And I've had some really odd responses from senior orthodontists on, well, we don't really need to know. And of course, in their point, they don't need to know because they can make teeth straight. And that seemed to be the answer, to make teeth straight. And I'm saying, okay, well, you can make them straight, but they don't stay there.
Yeah.
Asking people to wear retainers for the rest of their life, well, that's not really fixing something. You know, if I got a builder, if I had a leak in the roof and I got a builder around, I said, we'll fix that leak. And he goes, all right, it's all done, mate. Yeah, done, done. But if it rains, you need to put a tarpaulin over the top. And I'm going, sorry, I thought you fixed it. You know, you go back thousands of years, a bit more than 1,000, let's say, people had perfectly straight teeth from when they're born, to, well, not clearly, when the teeth erupted, to when they die. And that was normal in all humans. And you know, it was generally true in all the other 5,400 species of mammals. And it only really seemed to, it's become endemic, it's almost become normal. It's been normalized because it's happened to everyone. And it's always that risk that you start looking around at what normal is and you think that it's normal. Well, it is normal, but it is not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wreaking the issues of, you know, a face that's not the right shape doesn't work properly. And, you know, I can often, you know, I went to see a well-respected ear, nose and throat surgeon. So that would be otolaryngologist in the US. And I said to him, as I've said in a lecture before, I've said, I thought that 10% of the people over 60 were going to be dying 10 years early because of sleep apnea and its consequences.
Yikes.
And he said, oh my, it's more like 20%.
Oh, great.
And it just staggers me. So you've got a fifth of the population dying from sleep apnea. Now, sleep apnea was not in my syllabus when I qualified as a dentist in 93. Now, it's killing a fifth of the population a decade early.
So what does that mean? Killing us, like, is it contributing to other health problems that are killing people?
You know, sleep apnea, because what's happening in sleep apnea is, you know, you breathe in, you breathe out, you breathe in, you breathe out. You've got so little space that when you breathe in, your tongue gets pulled in to your airway. So what your body's doing is going to suck a little bit harder. And you try sucking a little bit harder. And clearly, really, that's not going to work, because the harder you suck, the more your tongue's going to get in your airway. So then you need to wake up, stimulate your conscious musculature to pull your tongue out your airway, and then you go back to sleep again. Well, this broken sleep pattern seems to be really caustic for all of the body systems. I mean, everything, you know, just basically your body starts falling apart young. And it's a big worry. It really worries me, particularly when I look at the fact that, you know, you Google back 1980s, because those are the guys, 1980s, because those are the guys who are going to be 20 then, who are 60 now, and look at 20-year-olds on photographs. And from my observation and from the orthodontic need at the time, it would appear that they had a far lower incidence. Well, clearly we don't think they had sleep apnea because it wasn't in my syllabus, but they seem to have great facial forms, much better facial forms than I'm seeing on the street now.
Yeah.
So that would indicate, if that's true, that it's 20% now. In a decade, it'll be 30% or 25%. A decade after that, more and more and more and more. Till someone wakes up to the fact that, yes, our faces are not growing correctly. And that's having a major impact. And of course, so that's in the sleep apnea in the elderly. When you look at sleep apnea in the kids, Stephen Sheldon in Chicago is saying that there's no such thing as ADHD. It's kids who've got short sleep.
Oh.
What do you give to kids who have ADHD? Give them amphetamines, keep them up. Also, he did an experiment. Well, it's not difficult. You know, yeah, he had a load of kids who they sleep deprived a group of kids for an experiment. You know, they got ethics to do that. And he, you know, the researcher phones him up and he says, please never, ever, ever ask me to do this experiment again.
Yeah. Ooh.
Because a room full of sleep deprived kids is just crazy. Kids that are very short of sleep, well, they're acting a little bit like kids with ADHD. So here's this crossover, and we're thinking, oh, isn't it interesting? All spectral issues are going up like this.
Yeah.
Sleep apnea going up like this. Malocclusion going up like this. Jaw joint problems going up like this. Poor posture, body posture. Because, you know, if you don't have enough space to breathe here, well, you can open your mouth, hang your tongue out. That's a good way of getting around it. Also, you can hold your head forward.
Oh.
So I'm suggesting...
Do you think it's not just phone use then?
I think that's not helping. Certainly not helping. But for most people, you know, you get your average person and ask them to stand up straight so that your earlobes over your traps, over your trapezius. And by the time they've got their head back there, they've got no airway. You know, you could say to them, stand up straight till you're blue in the face. And they're going to have the angel on the side going, oh, you know, he's absolutely right. You know, that's what we should be doing. Yeah, clear, it makes sense. You know, Mike says it, everyone's saying, great, 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 I'll stand up straight. And you've got the devil on the other side that says, breathe.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now, what's good? What are you going to remember? I can focus on something for a good 5 minutes before my attention wanders.
Yeah.
No, you know, you're not going to maintain an uncomfortable posture. So your head's going to drop forwards. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. You know, don't believe a word I'm saying, but believe in my desire to find out. Starting with, why are teeth crooked? And then we work up. So then the next thing I did, because clearly I didn't get my debate, you know, 5 years of letter writing camp, no one wanted the debate. And so then I start wanting to map out the pathological process, because my father had come up with all these ideas. It was really interesting. No one would ever talk to him. No one has ever given my father a meaningful scientific engagement.
It's
no,
crazy.
Never.
That's,
you know, it's great. But
John Mew.
You're not platformed. You know, what did Karl Popper, you know, the philosopher of science, he said that, you know, one of the problems is when you start controlling the means of communication within a science and you start excluding people. So people don't all get access to the means of communication. And that's the history of science, medical science particularly. You don't, Michele, you know, I've been fascinated in your story. You know, you've gone against medical doctrine. Completely against medical doctrine. And you must have stopped and thought, well, hang around. Why didn't someone, you know, all of the stuff you went through as a child, no one ever said to you, oh, by the way, could you consider this?
Yeah, yeah. Not once. They said, don't consider this, actually. When we said, should we? Definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because I went through the dress, but I've got here some worms. And I'm planning to infect myself with worms.
Helminthic therapy?
My Crohn's disease.
Whoa! Okay, you haven't tried it yet? I haven't tried that.
No, I've only arrived today. I'm just sitting there. I mean, you know, the really scary thing is I think you get a patch and you put the patch on your arm and the worms make it to your gut.
Oh my gosh.
you know. But what's modern medicine done? You know, I've been disemboweled twice. I am being, I'm clearly this the court case upon me, or is it just immense stress? It's
yeah,
just immense. And of course, the big problem here, the underlying reason why I'm not getting anywhere with this treatment is because people who've tried it, they realize it doesn't make money. Changing people doesn't make money. You know, you've got my old example of this is who makes money, a dietitian or a liposurgeon? Because one drives a Ferrari, the other rides a bicycle. And one's probably on all the committees in the hospital. And the other one just sees the new, you know, the committee decided this on, you know, on the email they were sent. Because one's bringing the bucks in. And yet, who's really doing the health benefit here?
I don't know if dietitians are
the dietitian, either. Yeah, because that's clearly what's going to make the health benefit. But fixing things makes money. So clearly, no one wants to do this. This technique is really difficult. And I've bust a gut over the last 10 years. You know, I've worked exceptionally hard, you know, to the point where I've damaged my health. And this court case has then further damaged it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I can't really make money out of this. You know, so it's not going to fly. This treatment I've got, it's, you know, I believe that I could take any young child and grow them into a beautiful person. Or should I say, in my words, growing into a healthy person. And that's my belief. That's the premise of what I'm saying. But I need, you know, I can't charge enough sensibly to cover the costs of doing that. I mean, I run this clinic by reducing my wage right down. So by reducing my wage right down and working really hard, I can run the clinic. And then I hit with a court case and bang, all my savings have gone.
Oh.
And my health is just, my Crohn's disease is, you know, just ramping up my Crohn's disease. So, you know, it's... Yeah, I'm in a bit of a hole sometimes. But, you know, one of the nice things is that this mewing thing seems to have taken off.
And yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's crazy. I you know, to try and get a metric, a handle on how well this mewing has been doing. Someone pointed it out to me, and since I've been checking the TikTok, because
mm-hmm.
on TikTok people put these hashtags. So now the hashtag mewing has been viewed, or videos that have the hashtag mewing has been viewed to date 2.1 billion times.
Crazy.
On TikTok, which is just absolutely insane. And so clearly there's a huge interest in this. And so I'm going to put a mewing app out. And it's not quite ready, but it should be out soon. Because most of this, you know, I I'm drawing parallels with your father here. I had a list of videos for my patients so that I didn't have to describe this lots of times. And having given this lecture, people jump on the videos I had for my patients. And the rest with them in history. But I've not really given my full account of what you could do to improve yourself. And so I'm hoping that I can monetize the mewing app, and then I can cross-subsidize my clinic. And, you know, I'm trying to do science here, and that's a really, really hard thing to do with just zero help from the establishment. You know, we have a public healthcare system here. There are scientists, full-time salaried researchers, whose job it is to hunt out comments from the clinicians and look into things in greater detail and research things. Well, I'm completely excluded from this process. You know, the biggest orthodontic training program is literally, I reckon you could make it door to door on the train in about 25 minutes from here. And
yeah.
you know, I've been trying to talk to the professor for what, 6 years, just trying to get a little pilot study going or something. And it's, but in a way, we're talking here. People are talking about, science. You're supposed to compare the same thing. We're comparing apples and pears because I'm not trying to make teeth straight. Yeah, I'd love them to become straight, but all I do is I herd them into general areas, and then I work on improving facial form. Now, I expect the patient to largely make their own teeth straight. Now, I'm never going to compete with the fixed braces that make the teeth straight. I'm not in the same ballpark. I can't. But if a patient makes their own teeth straight, they're liable to stay straight. Maybe I don't get such a perfect result, but they're liable to stay straight. If someone else makes your teeth straight, they're unliable to stay there. And that's exactly what we see. So people put retainers in. And I worry that retainers are holding teeth out the balance zone. That they're holding teeth out of where they want to go. Now you can do that with a retainer that can hold the tooth. But can you also hold the bone out there and the supporting tissues? Because the evidence probably says no. And we just, you know, we haven't been on this mass orthodontics bandwagon for that long. And this relatively recent push for permanent retainer, lifelong retention, it's a relatively new thing. Yeah. And I clearly have my worries about that. And, you know, I would love to engage some people in meaningful debate on this. That's what I want. You know, any professor on the planet, please take up a platform with me so that we can have meaningful engagement about my concerns. Because
it's reasonable.
I think it's more than reasonable.
It makes way more sense than it's just medical system can be crazy because it makes way more sense that something's wrong than, oh, it's just suddenly genetic.
Yeah,
it just suddenly changed and now everyone needs braces because humans have evolved with braces.
Yeah. And when when people say to me, you know, they will say, oh, well, it's this racial intermixing, you know, mummies, small jaws with but daddy's big teeth. Sorry, that's clearly been proven to be wrong.
That's a good one.
You know,
that's a good
one. I mean, Chung's research in Hawaii, you know, he was taking thousands of people. He clearly demonstrates that's not the case. And, you know, any geneticist would laugh that out. But
yeah,
these ideas just get perpetuated because they're said so often.
So how do you, so if you have a kid, how do you make sure that their teeth are going to fit in their mouth and that their jaw starting from like zero?
Yeah. So if we're going to take a purely preventative option.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I really don't understand what's going on below about 3-4 years old. I mean, I want to take some time off, really investigate this and look at cases because it's not something really people have looked at. And of course, people aren't born with teeth, usually. So, you know, I would love to just look at skulls and 3D scan lots and lots of people to see what's happening. Let's say I was giving advice to you now as a mother of a 5-year-old. Okay, so I have my 5-point prevention strategy. The first is stand up straight and shut your mouth. You know, which harks back to your dad's first rule. You know, although he's just saying stand up, I think there's a little bit more subtlety, but you know, we could go into that. But the second thing is eat with your mouth shut. And this is something, so you sit directly opposite your child and you can sit there. So the one I did last night with my child, I sat there opposite daughter number 2, who's 6 years old. She wanted to watch something on the phone. So I sat there with the phone, and every time her lips were apart or she didn't sit up straight, I just like that. And she knew it. So I prompted her the first few times. And pretty soon, you know, she got it. And all I had to do was sit there doing this every time she didn't sit up straight. And, you know, what I'm saying to her is that her lips should only separate for the fork to go, the food to go in the mouth. And you should have a relatively small amount of food in the mouth going in at one time, not a huge amount. You put a relatively small bite in your mouth. Then the lips go closed. And all of the extended actions should be done with the lips sealed. You're training the lips to be together. And you simply sit opposite them, make sure you go every single meal. They've got their lips together all the time. And that's a hell of a thing to do. Michaela, you know, you're a mum. You know how busy it is. You know how chaotic it is. And you've got to sit there at as many meals as humanly possible. I would suggest the evening meals would be a great thing to do it. And you make sure that they're sitting up straight. You know this, you know, they say that if you do a brisk 10-minute walk every day, you reduce the chance of a cardiovascular, a heart attack. You know, it's really, really pushing this in the UK. I don't know if they're saying that in the US at the moment, but they're encouraging the elderly community to have a brisk 10-minute walk. Well, if I could get young children from as young as possible to do 30 to 40 minutes exercise from this young age, this would be, you know, really powerful. When are we using the mouth? When we're eating. So I've got this super secret exercise. Can't tell anyone. The mealtime exercise. Sit up straight, elbows off the table, eat with your mouth shut, chew your food properly, don't speak when you're eating, food to you, not you to your food. And when you go to swallow, pause, chin tuck, bite together and swallow. Well, apart from that last bit I threw in, that's probably the least secret exercise on the planet. I've had people coming for consultations with me from all over the world, from all different groups. And everyone, bar one person who was brought up in the Amazon jungle without tables and chairs, they all had that exercise in their collective memory, their cultural memory. Now that's because it worked. So for, as I said before, from Confucius was saying exactly that, right through to the Victorians, to being every culture. And all of these cultures are saying exactly the same thing. And you think, well, actually, that's really weird. That's either that's magic, or there's a really important thing why they're saying that. And it's because it worked. And back in those days, when someone didn't grow well, it was obvious because everyone else did grow well. So from that book, The low-lying fruit on that is eat with your lips together. If you can get your child to eat with lips together, you're making massive inroads. Then I'd recommend chew gum. From when they come home after school until they go to bed, chew gum the whole time. And I'd go for a tougher gum than usual. Then I'd lip tape at night. You know, clearly you check for some medical advice. I don't want to be suggesting this to people who may have other conditions, but go online, check situation, see a doctor, check it's fine. But then just simple lip taping across the lips. So you'll normally recommend micropore tape to be used at night. I often use this one here, which is, if you can see that, there's micropore silicone. This tape, I like, don't start night times with a kid. Start in the daytime because you've got to suddenly give them tape. Never put tape on your child while they're asleep. You need they need to be bought into this. They need to want to do that. So you start with this blue tape, and this blue tape is great because, of course, you can put this on someone's lips. You can take it off, put it somewhere where you might need it in the future. And then next time they want to watch a device, they have the device, and the lip tape has to go on. But because the lip tape's here, you don't have to go to the drawer. It's right here, or you can stick it to the kitchen cupboards. You've got it there. And when they're watching the phone, they've got to have the lip tape on.
That's such a good idea.
And then once they're used to that, and once you've done some, you know, you set up and, you know, you find out what, I'm sure there's something they want to watch on the phone. And you then, you set up maybe a film or something, and they've got to have, they've got to have the lip tape on for the duration of this movie. And, or they can't watch the movie, and that's going to be enough of incentive for them to do it. And then when they're finished, once they've done that once or twice, then you can consider lip taping at night. And what I also then did was for the kids often get up before me. They come into my bedroom, say, can I have your phone? And I'll say, if they've got the lip tape on, yes. If you haven't got your lip tape on, no. So then they're going to have the lip tape on. So what we did, my 5-point prevention, chew gum all afternoon, lip tape, eat your meals with your lips together, and then remind them always to stand up straight and shut your mouth. And then the final point is get good records. It amazes me how people come to see me and they've got no idea how their child's face grew in the past. Got no decent records. You know, it's simple with records. If you don't know where you were, you don't know where you're going. This isn't complicated. This is every parent. I actually think every dentist should take a sideways photograph, you know, a lateral photograph of every child in their care every year above the age of 4. That should be a mandatory requirement of all dentists to do that, because this is such an important metric of health. And
that's great.
I think there's so much you can do, you know. You can Google it, my 5-point prevention plan. It's, you know, this, you know, and also while we're about this, can I put a plug out for our campaign, Prevent Crooked Teeth? And so preventcrookedteeth.com, that's my campaign to try and look into these prevention, you know, why can't we try to prevent these problems?
Yeah.
We should at least be trying.
No, we should be. We should be. And so does that mean, so say malocclusion is preventative using those. What about diet?
Well, a tough diet.
From a younger age, or breastfeeding. Do you think that plays a role?
So breastfeeding, yeah. I think that's really massively valuable. But what it seems that can really mess breastfeeding up is the introduction of soft food. So, you know, the first few times you try and feed your child pureed food, they just go and most of it comes back out again. So you wipe their face off, you pick up another spoon, put it in. And eventually they're going to learn to suckle on this food. So when we're young, we suckle. And then we're a little bit older, we start to swallow. And there should be this transition between suckling and swallowing. Well, what we're doing is we're giving children food that's so soft they don't need to swallow. And we're doing it at such a young point that they're probably not ready to do a proper swallow. So we train them to make a modified suckle. And I think about 85% of the population is doing a modified suckle.
Instead of a swallow?
Yeah. So most people, you've got a slight suckle when you swallow. So yeah, that's...
No. What does that look like? What does that look like? What's the difference between a suckle and a swallow?
So if you're going to suckle,
this is awful.
So if I'm going to swallow,
okay,
nothing's going on here. You know?
Yeah.
And then if I do a modified suckle,
oh, I don't like that. I know what that is now.
So, you know.
I have water. Can I go? Okay, what does this look like? I'm smiling too.
Yeah, you're smiling. So I can see the little marks.
Okay, I'll try not smiling.
Going on down here at the moment, but
did you see that?
That looked much better, yeah. Because when you think about it, what are you doing? To do that, you're having to push your tongue up on the roof of the mouth.
Yeah.
What's going to be the side effect of that after 10 years? It's going to drive your cheekbones.
Are you not supposed to? Oh, yeah. So that's good. Okay. I watched some of your videos the other day. And I'd heard about mewing a long time ago. Like a long time ago, maybe 2016 or 2017, like a while ago.
Okay.
And I didn't realize. So I've been trying to practice, you know, for the last since 2016. And I didn't know that you were supposed to put your teeth together.
Mm, vital.
Which seems like
a
bit vital. I've just been pressing my tongue up.
I mean,
without my teeth together, it's awful.
Yeah, you shouldn't even actually be pressing your tongue up. What you should do is you should create a vacuum in your mouth so your tongue stays up there. So Vincent, like, okay, so now I've got comfortable posture. Okay.
Okay.
Comfortable posture, but my tongue's down. Then I'm going to swallow my tongue, swallow several times. So I create a vacuum and my tongue is glued on the roof of the mouth with the back third properly engaged. Okay. I can't talk because my tongue will be there, but. Now, this is my comfortable posture.
Oh.
So when your tongue, this is my hunch and my belief is that the back third of the tongue, you know, because the front third of the tongue is from the ectodermal tissues, like, you know, all the things we think of as us. The back third is the endodermal tissues, the bit that's sort of subconscious. And the premise here is that that back third is part of the deep cervical postural muscles, or the ring of muscles around your neck. So that back third of the tongue is helping keep your head upright, so you have good head posture. And of course, as soon as you get that vacuum going, your tongue is going to be glued to the roof of the mouth. And the net side effect of that is your cheekbones, the mid-face just pushes out.
I just got it. I definitely have not been
I mean, when...
I didn't realize it was a vacuum.
That's all you're trying to do, because then you can maintain the vacuum just by holding lip seal. And that's no effort, you see. These things shouldn't take effort. And I think I would watch with the mewing community, all these people, and I'm, you know, I kind of purposefully held back a little bit because, I don't want to own all of this. I don't want to micromanage something or control it. That's control. Science shouldn't be controlled by anyone. Science should be free to develop itself. But one of the reasons I'm doing this mewing app, because I think that there's so much misinformation out there.
Yeah.
The other way is I need to make some revenue. You know, I've got to find answers. No one else is really looking for the answers. You know, no one's on this. Who would be so stupid as to run their clinic at a loss, work so goddamn hard, and run all the risks I'm running? You know? So hopefully with the mewing app, I can make some headway. I can get some funding to do what I'm doing, trying to save the faces of the world, because, you know, it's not just these young kids. It's so much of humanity's faces are not growing well.
Okay. Last question. Then I'll let you go. For advice, because you gave a lot of advice for parents of children, and that's very hopeful.
Yeah.
What about older people? You said above 25, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Is that do they need surgery or are there things they can do?
Okay, so surgery is definitely an option. My worry about the surgery in many instances is that the surgeons will go and look at, well, they've got to know where to put the jaws. And what they do is they look back at these, the x-rays that were sort of taken as that we talk about normative data. You know, you need to know what normal is. And all of these x-rays were taken in the middle of the 1900s.
What's normal?
So early to middle of 1900s, when x-rays became available. Well, we're talking of a disease that 10,000 years ago didn't exist and has progressively got worse in the last, I think it's accelerated in the last 100 years. Well, at the right near the end point of this disease, you've taken your normative data. So I would challenge the data most surgeons are using where they are thinking where to put someone's face. Now, there are some surgeons in the US particularly who are really trying to move faces up and forwards even further. And, you know, I'm really impressed with some of the results. I know a guy in Australia, I know a surgeon in Barcelona, I know a couple in US, particularly in the California direction, and all of them are really trying to move faces up and forwards with varying degrees of success, because of course it's more difficult to do that. But, you know, if you're heading for sleep apnea, this is a great fix that can bunny jump you forwards. That can help you to change your own posture and function. That would
That's
be double
jaw
surgery. Now, there's something, you know, we're talking about using screws into the bone to widen the top jaw as a sort of halfway house to surgery, minor surgical interventions. And I'm moving away from that just because I've got to hunk down, focus on my core business, stop treating adults for a while, because there's so much heat on me at the moment. And I'm just going to go back to my core business because, you know, I'm losing money. Well, what can I do?
That's,
you know, these
awful.
Adults come in and they're desperate for me to treat them. And I'm saying, I couldn't touch you because, you know, from an orthodontist would criticize me for providing the treatment. It's one of the cases against me, you know, You know, parents are overjoyed with the treatment. I've done probably one of the most, you know, what we've done, I believe, is one of the most beneficial things she's done in her life. And they're taking me to court.
Oh, what?
Well, you know, the other case I didn't even treat. So, you know, and the third case is the British Orthodontic Society has gone through my videos, found things they don't like about it, and really put, really,
shocking.
You know, in a really quite harsh way, referred me to my regulator. So, you know, it's too high risks to run. And also, you know, I just want to go down to my core business for a while, reduce my clinical hours because I'm not making money, and then see if I can make money from, well, the luck I've had with mewing and somehow from online presence, if I can make money then, and then I'll just cycle it back into the clinic and sponsor the research that I would love.
That's a good idea.
You know, universities to be helping me with, but they're not helping me. So what do I do?
That's a good,
idea. Yeah.
No, I mean, you should do
as
it.
This,
you
I mean,
should make an app.
As I said, the only people really interested in what I'm saying are people with faces. But if you happen to have a face, this is utterly fascinating. This is uber fascinating. And, you know, eventually, you know, when the Sultan of Oman really realizes the value of what I'm doing, or I wish the royal family in the UK, they would, who are they going to send their kid to? And then money suddenly becomes no object. You know, if you really want your child to grow well, you know, irrespective of the cost of that, well, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. But
okay, Mike, I don't know. Well, I don't know. You've got a lot of views on TikTok. I think that you can make this work with the app. Good luck with the regular.
You know, as I said, it is stressful.
That's stressful.
I would love to be doing what your father's doing and trying to use the case against me, flip it back to highlight the... I've got to be careful my words here. To highlight this situation. You know?
Fewer words.
Because... But it's, you know, it's really hard because all the lawyers just say, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet. So, you know, you don't get much help knowing what you can say and what you can't say.
Yeah. And nothing's going to change either.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is the problem. Whenever someone gets under the spotlight of the regulator, they are told on no uncertain terms they've got to be absolutely storm, not say anything. And then they get removed by the regulator and no one knows.
What danger are you even posing to people?
In an entire profession. And remember...
Okay, yes, that. But to an individual, there's no danger posed with, if you change your posture and put your tongue in the right place...
The suggestion is that this girl I treated would have grown like that anyway, and I'm just milking the parents for unnecessary treatment and unnecessary appliances. Also, of course, you can read from, you know, when you read the transcript of the prosecuting expert, I am, you know, insulting his profession. You know, you can see it's a visceral dislike of what I'm saying. You know, you can see that in the wording of what he says. It's, you know, the people don't like that. And of course, then this is this, you know, the really big story is that sometimes, and I don't say it happens all the time, modern orthodontics may, and clearly it does sometimes, retract the face. You know, of course, there's a downswing in facial form. Now, if that's happening, then you're going to increase the chance of sleep apnea, which means you could potentially make someone live less long. You're going to potentially cause, you know, you have the risks of childhood sleep apnea, which is reduced intelligence. I mean, that's quite well mapped out by David Gonzalez and lots of other people. And then you've got the fact they're going to be less attractive.
Oof.
Now, you've gone along to an orthodontist. He's not warned you about these possible side effects. It's an elective procedure that you didn't need to have done. And you can, you know, just talking about this subject is just stirring up the hornet's nest. And, you know, people will hate me just for mentioning this now. And, you know, I don't want to definitively say this happens all the time. I would like to point out that my father was on national television in the UK in 98 saying that he felt orthodontics could damage faces. And of course, he was basically excommunicated at that point. And he has now lost his license himself. But all I'm saying is we need open debate on this. Now, I'm saying I'm right. I'm just, we need meaningful. So I say a full, fair, and free debate where everyone gets invited. You know, the American Association of Orthodontics had a special meeting to cover this risk of sleep apnea and whether orthodontics causes sleep apnea. Well, the people, most of them, you know, disciples of my father's, who, you know, like someone like Bill Hang, who did more to raise this issue of sleep apnea from extractions and retraction than anyone, wasn't invited to speak. So, well, you know, and he, you ask him for his opinion on that event. It doesn't smell good. And again, I would like just meaningful debate on that. That's all I want is I want engagement. I want the scientific process. Remember, don't believe a word I say. Believe in the scientific process. Believe in my desire for scientific engagement because I want answers. I desperately want answers. I'm running, you know, I'm running as a purist a system in this clinic as I can to gain the best possible outcomes. but changing people doesn't make money. QED.
Where can people go online to find you?
To find me?
Yeah, social media, websites.
Please don't. I get more mails than I can cope with. I mean, I was just not really prepared. Orthodontists flippantly go, oh, just do some research, you know, just do that. You know, when you're working so hard and you've got so limited resources, it's really, really hard to go and do meaningful research on this. And then what do I prove? Well, they're getting straighter teeth than I am, and they won't show the faces. Every time I've suggested research, they go, oh, well, we're going to look at the teeth, but no, we can't show the faces because that would be breaching confidentiality.
Oh, crazy.
And I go, well, have you asked the patients whether they mind? Because you might find that's going to go fine. I don't mind. All I want is, you know, one thing I've asked time and time again over the years is to have some comparative research. So I say, you take 10 cases, I'll take 10 cases. We'll have an independent assessor who has the name and address of the patients in case they opt out treatment, so he can independently check why they dropped out. And we follow the cases for 10 years after the treatment and just see what happens. You know, this would cost minimum amount because you're treating the patients anyway. And you don't have to have exactly matched patients because it's just, you know, an exploratory trial. And I've been asking for what? 30 years we've been asking for this. 30 years. And I remember my father asking one group of more alternative orthodontists, and the person he organized, the head of the group, came back with a message from someone. And the message was, all John Mew wants to do is show off his good facial outcomes. Where can you go? I mean, I've never had a really meaningful engagement with any orthodontist of note ever. You know, I always hold me. When I was at university, I had to hold back what I was saying because I just upset people. And, you know, people can, you know, I'm apparently I'm the known charlatan.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, a lot of people are listening, though. Like, you might not have won through the scientific community or the regulators, but I mean, people are paying attention.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm going to have to monetize this because otherwise I don't get the reach that I need to change the world.
Yeah. Plus, there's nothing wrong with monetizing if you're going to be helping people. And if you're avoiding thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of orthodontics anyway, potentially, that's really saving money.
Yeah. You know, what I want to... My always main focus has been prevention. You know, I want to go forward working out treatments. You know, I don't claim my treatment's the best. My official version of my treatment is terrible. It's only better than the alternatives.
That's great. That sounds like my dad.
Yes. You know, thank you.
Okay. Well, Mike, it was very nice meeting you. When you do have your app up and running, I'll link it in this video so people can check it out.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.